We have web tests, manual tests, load tests, unit tests, automated generic, ordered, and third party. Now, as just a straight list of tests, that may not be as interesting. So let's talk about what's in the product right now if you've got the tech ed bits. The web tests are there. Web tests are essentially a way to go to a website, click through it, click on different buttons, click on different forms, submit different data, and that all the web traffic gets saved, and we then can play it back without you writing a single line of code. So I have a website, I want to test it, I go through it, I record it, I play it back, and we get the test. And we can then use that test inside the Visual Studio framework. A manual test. So in my organization, I don't actually write a ton of code. My job is to come up with scenarios to walk the product through manually. I give those to other people, and I share them with other people, and I want other people to kind of, you know, use those and follow the steps. You know, Visual Studio helps you do that. We actually use Word and a text file to do that. So if you have Office and you want to use Word, that's great. If you don't have Office and you want to just use a text file format, you can use that too, and we have that all integrated into, and you can see the integrated reports all with that. So just because you're not writing code inside Visual Studio, you're still able to do testing. A lot of people on the web have asked that question, what if I don't want to write code? Do I have a mechanism to do that? And we do give you that mechanism. Load tests are one of the most interesting types of tests. Load tests let you take a lot of other tests, any other type of test, probably not a manual test though, but any other automated test, and put it inside a container, inside the load test container. And then we can run that set of tests under load. So you can like tweak some knobs and talk about how much load you want generated against your server or against your application, and then we run those tests against that and then collect all the performance data. So if you expected your app to perform a certain way under a certain amount of load, you didn't want to get certain, you didn't expect to get so much disk thrashing, or you didn't expect to get so much memory usage, we can show you that, allow you to set thresholds and see where those points fail. Unit tests, of course, for this crowd it might be pretty obvious, but unit tests are tests written by developers, typically, and they can be used by testers, and they can be written by testers. We're not limiting you to that, but you know, traditionally, when we talk about the unit test definition, developers write unit tests to go right up against their code, or very technical testers sometimes write unit tests to go right up against the code. Sometimes this is called white box testing, and it goes against the code, very, very tightly integrated. We're going to get very deep into the unit test discussion just because most people are interested in the in-unit and test-driven development stuff, and so we decided to get pretty deep in this presentation to that. Automated tests are just what they sound like, kind of a base form of testing. How do I make a test by hand that just is automated that I can then run inside Visual Studio? We give you a way to do that. Generic tests are interesting. We'll talk about them a little bit. They're the beginning of our extensibility story, not our end. But if you have an existing harness today that you have in your organization and you want to wrap that and have it used inside Visual Studio, you don't want to convert all those tests, or you don't want to rewrite them by hand, you can just wrap them inside a generic test. Now they're executable from Visual Studio, and it gives you a way to do that.
Is that a way you can harness any unit tests that are in place now?
Yes, it is. And we'll show you an example of that. Order tests allow you to take a set of tests and order them, put them in an order and run them. So if I have 5 unit tests, and together they make a scenario, if I run them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I can put them in an order container and run them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Third-party tests are also in the build today. Third-party tests are kind of the rest of the extensibility story when it comes to testing types. So we give you the ability to write your own testing type. You know, we didn't want to create kind of this is Microsoft's brand of test. We knew that wouldn't work. Test teams are very highly complex, and you know, just one static set of types wouldn't be enough to service all of those teams. So we went ahead and exposed a way for everyone to add their own types into Visual Studio, and our partners like CompuWare have already started to do that. So at TechEd, we actually presented with CompuWare, and we showed their sets of tests running with our sets of tests, just as if they were built into Visual Studio from the ground up. And actually what they did was leverage this third-party interface, build into it, and now their tests are inside Visual Studio. So let's talk about unit testing specifically. So when we talk about unit testing, we're talking about developers or very technical testers who want to write code that is very tightly tied to the actual programming interface. It's almost always automated. It's typically a one-to-one mapping. So it's very tightly coupled. Very white box. Typical problems we hear, though, in this model are things like, well, it's just tedious. I'm going to build a set of unit tests for a large number of my methods, and it's just hard. It just takes a lot of time. And if I have to learn, if I have to learn all these different things to actually get the test framework to use, yeah, at 3 o'clock in the morning when I've just got my dev code done, that's not a great thing. So it should kind of be simple. It should not be so tedious. If I have 200 methods that I have to write unit tests for, it'd be really great if that was just really easy. It should also not tie me to one process. If I'm doing unit testing today, but tomorrow I want to migrate to doing test-driven development, it shouldn't stop me from that. If I'm doing test-driven development today, I should find this useful. It shouldn't be the case that you've locked me into a Microsoft standard way of the development process. You know, and with things like MSF, you know, we really want to go in a different direction than that. We want to really open it up. So this is like, you know, these are typical problems we hear. And probably the most, one of the biggest argument we hear is just that this isn't, once I go through all this pain, once I do fight the tediousness, once I do learn a framework, once I do kind of break through the process barrier, it's just not very effective. I make a set of unit tests, I produce them, and we still have lots of bugs. And that's not a great thing. So we kind of looked at Visual Studio unit testing and we said, how can we fix all of these? How can we make unit testing better for the developer in the field and at a company? So the first thing we wanted to do is just, you know, make unit testing easy. Let's go ahead and make it low overhead. Let's make it where you don't have to inherit from a ton of interfaces. You don't have to inherit from a ton of objects. You don't have to implement a lot of interfaces. There's not a ton of APIs to use, but there are some things to help me, so I don't have to do everything by hand, right? That was the first set of challenges we faced. And the first thing we said, let's make it easy, let's do this. So the first thing we want to show you with the bits is actually going ahead and writing a unit test by hand so you can just see how straightforward it is.
Have you had luck doing it that way? I've always just not selected settings or select burden settings.
Okay. So this is definitely pre-shipping bits. If it should happen to explode, you can tell by the beautiful colors on the screen, right? If it happened to explode, please forgive us. So we're going to go ahead, and I'm just going to very quickly create a new project inside Visual Studio. So I'm going to click on C#. As you can see, the icons are a little scattered. We're definitely going to fix that. You know, go ahead and click a test project. I'm going to say OK here. It's going to ask me this crazy question. We'll say OK. We'll make those dialogues look a lot better by the time we ship.
Some of them will be going away.
That's right. That's right. So we're going to go ahead and click on, we're going to just go ahead and name our test unit test one. I think we'll go ahead and just leave it that way. And so what we see here is that we've just outputted a ton of great templatized information for you. But before I explain that, I'm just going to delete it all and start over. And the reason I'm going to do that is because we said we're going to write one by hand. So we want to show really how simple this is. So the first thing I want to note is the actual line at the top, using Visual Studio Quality Tools Unit Testing Framework. So we went ahead, and instead of writing that long line, that's just actually including the you know, referencing the libraries of the helper APIs that we're going to use. We're going to go ahead, create a class here. Public class unit test one, and then public unit test one, my good constructor. Oops. And then public void call my test my new unit test. So save, I compile, and I see that this succeeded. We have, you know, we have a class that was built, and everything worked great, and this is what you expect to write if you're a C# developer. Pretty much nothing to learn here. If we check out the actual test view that we said was a nice tool to help developers find their tests, we'll see that no tests have shown up yet. So we're in a test project. We've began to write a kind of a little framework for our test, our first basic test, but it's really not a test yet. So that begs the question, how do I make it a test? So I go to my normal class, I go, I add the attribute test class, and as soon as I do that, now this class is actually recognized by Visual Studio as a container of tests. And if I then go to the test method and say test method, that's right. If you're familiar with the in-unit way of doing things, this is going to sound very familiar to you. And that's by design. I mean, we definitely looked at kind of the different community tools that are out there and said what works versus what doesn't work. And the ones, you know, some of the experiences that we thought did work, the attribute-based testing, we went ahead and said, yeah, that's a good model to get into. That doesn't mean that other vendors won't have other models. They will. And we'll help them support those. But this is just ours, you know, an attribute-based system that's kind of Microsoft-specific that you can kind of use. We now see that once I've just added test class and test method and I compiled, we now see the test is actually listed in the test view. There's my test. So just by, you know, I created a little class. It took me less than 2 minutes. I put a couple of attributes there, and now it's a test. Now, I'm going to go ahead and use one of the libraries that we know about. We have this assert class of libraries, which also very in-unit-like. And we're going to go ahead and select inconclusive. And we're going to put a message and say, need to write some test code here. Right? Right. Compile. We succeeded. Now I can grab my test and just execute it. We get this great dialog that comes up. This dialog is the run configuration dialog box. And there's a way to very quickly say, you know, use this selected run config for all runs so you don't have to keep seeing this dialog box. But what it does is allow you to set runtime parameters for your particular test run. So if I want to do things like change the machine configuration to run externally on a third part, on a third machine, or on a separate machine, or remote machine, rather than on my local machine, I can do that. If I want to run code coverage, I just click on a tab, do some code coverage information, and then I'll actually get the code coverage numbers, which we'll see in a little while. And if I want to do some deployment information, deploy some files with my test, we go ahead and allow you to do that here too. All runtime variables that you can set on the actual run itself. You can also then go and save that information so that you can then use that information later. So if you, you know, go through the trouble of configuring something for run config information, you don't have to actually go define that every time. Save it, use it for every run if you'd like, or share it with other members of your team. This is particularly important when you think about the BBT scenario. So I'm in the lab, and I have a way of deploying certain files during the build verification, and I want to share that with other developers so they can kind of repro the exact steps that the BBT lab takes in order to verify a build. Well, now this makes it very easy. I have my configuration file, I give it to someone, they import it inside Visual Studio, and you're done. Once I click OK here, we see the test results window pops up at the bottom there. We see my new unit test has run. The outcome is inconclusive, as we actually said that would be the assert that we'd throw. And what we see is that the error message is assert inconclusive failed, need to write some test code here. So if I had some inconclusive test results inside my code, and I accidentally checked that in and put it inside a known category like BBTs, and I used that in a lab and actually ran some tests that had the result inconclusive, reports would still see that as a failure. You know, you wouldn't be able to see, you know, a test that was in your build that had an inconclusive run and actually, you know, mistakenly think the run of tests, the set of tests I executed, actually all passed. But we do go ahead and note that differently from an actual failed result where I've actually gotten the result, compared it to something, and I know it's a known failure and I need to go ahead and log a bug. This is more of a test development error or a test development investigation rather than a dev code investigation. So that's pretty much this most straightforward way of going ahead and writing a unit test by hand. Very straightforward, very simple.
When the results window is there, does that export out to XML or anything that can then be imported by importing tools?
Right. So the question is, you know, can it export out? So by default, this window is populated by a set of XML that's on disk, and you can definitely read it yourself if you'd like to. Another interesting feature that I'll show here, because we don't show it in other parts of the demo, because we don't have the server bits hooked up with this particular, because we just kind of threw this demo together at the last minute. But if I right-click on this particular result, assume that it was a real failure, we'll see there's an actual menu item, Create Bug. If I click Create Bug, it would actually take this test result, take the information, put it inside the bug, and then give that bug, assign that bug to whomever I wanted. The developer could take that particular bug, open it up, double-click on that result, open it inside their copy of Visual Studio, and rerun the test.
And that has all that rich stack trace information that you showed us in that other show.
That's right. That's right. Yes. And in some case, it actually has more. It has all the information that the tester wanted to gather and then some. So it literally, you know, from a development perspective, if you've ever had that, been in that situation where you get a test without a repro case, you're like, rats, if I had the repro case at 2 a.m., I could go ahead and do something. Here I'm blocked until, you know, the tester comes in the morning. Now I actually have the repro case. And if you actually had the repro case, but you wish you could actually do some investigation on what the tester saw on their actual config, we can actually show you that. Good stuff. So yeah, so that's basically writing a unit test by hand.
Does unit testing know about refactoring?
Yes, it does, and we'll show you that as well.
Cool. Let's see, and is there any kind of IntelliSense awareness of the testing? I'm not sure what feature it is that I'm looking for, but it seems like somehow when I'm in my code, having IntelliSense that lets me go to a test-related test method, is that...
Right-click, go-to test?
Something like that. I'm not, yeah.
Yeah, so as you reference your dev code, you can right-click and jump right to the definition of that dev code. You can also, as you're typing, you get the typical IntelliSense features you get as you write your test to your dev code.
It's going the other way.
Yeah.
I'm in the dev code.
Right.
Being able to go from the dev code, right-click, here are all the 15 test cases that come with this method.
Yeah. Unfortunately, in V1, we're probably not going to get there.
Okay.
We definitely want to get there because everyone wants that feature, right? I want to see, first of all, I want to be able to select my tests via code coverage,
right?
I want to be able to see kind of, you know, I have some dev code, I've changed it. What tests touch this dev code? You know, you want to see those particular tests, right? So that's a nice feature. And then actually the linking of, I have my test code, which tests actually target this particular segment of my code? You know, actually showing you that as well. What we do have in V1 is a way to, and we'll show you this in a little while, we talk about the reporting, but in Team System, again, the unit testing is not a feature onto itself. It's integrated with all these other pieces. So when we talk about unit testing, a lot of times we do get that request. How do I see, you know, here's a typical example, I guess, instead of telling you what we're looking for is, I'm inside a meeting. You tell me a unit test fails. What does that mean to the business case? Right, that's a typical question we get asked, right? You know, I'm a project manager. The code modules, I don't really have exposure to those. You're telling me you have a test against this particular code module. How do I know what business case gets impacted? Mm-hmm. And so if you link your features via Team System, then we actually keep a categorization list of all those features. As you write your tests and your dev code, you can link them back to those features. So literally, as you find bugs and your tests find those bugs, you can say, this test associated with this feature has found that bug. And so now the information about the business case can be extracted. You can say, not just this test module, or not just this code module found a bug in this code module, but literally this code module, this test found the bug in this module, and that's linked to this set of features, which is linked to this set of requirements and this specification. And actually show you that from the holistic approach of your product rather than just the actual code module.
Complete traceability. That's awesome.
That's right.
So can I think of that as being kind of akin to a call graph or something of that sort?
Yeah, I don't
think... Going from tests all the way back up to...
Yeah, I don't, you know, in V1, I mean, to be completely honest, we're in V1, right. So you know, how close we get to that, you know, the kind of utopian view is, if I could see a visualization of all that, and we're getting there. We have a lot of tools built around that sort of thing, but in V1 we probably won't get as far as that, but it's definitely a set of features that are meant to show that. I mean, like I said earlier, conceptually, we're trying to break down those silos, like, you know, we're trying to cut them down. So we know if you go to a tester or a developer on a team and you say, where are you at? The developer and the tester are going to give you a pretty interesting story. If you go to a project manager, sometimes that story is vastly different. It's not because the project manager is trying to sell you. Not a lot of times. I mean, sometimes maybe. But in general, those guys just don't have that exposure to that the lowest set of features. How can we, you know, get that information to those desktops? And vice versa. You know, if I'm a tester and I'm trying to figure out, you know, what types of test cases I should write, in the ideal world, I know. Right? I know the scenarios that are most important to my team. But all too often, that gets lost in the shuffle. You know, some guy over here in project management has defined those scenarios, and management has agreed that this is probably one, this is probably two, this is probably three. But somehow, at the lowest level of the organization, the developer up at 2 a.m., or the tester who's, you know, there in the lab, they don't understand what that scenario is. This lets them see that, all from within Visual Studio.
Guys, one more V2 question.
Go crazy.
Can I run a test while I'm in Edit and Continue?
Yeah, so...
And I'm assuming the answer is no, but...
Yeah, we don't do anything to break the edit and continue phase. So the way I'll answer that question is by saying we definitely have integrated debugging. And debugging, part of the debugging scenario is edit and continue. You know, in V1, what we get there for is a perfect edit and continue experience. We hope we'll get, you know, as close as other parts of Visual Studio, but, you know, we probably won't get, you know.
Maybe I was asking a different question, which is, so I'm working on my production code.
Yep.
And I'm in edit and continue, and I want to make some changes.
Yep.
Can I make those changes, and instead of continuing through the execution of my dev code, can I first run tests and then continue stepping through my code? And I'm assuming that's, you know, no V2 or 3 or 4 or 5, but
yeah.
Is it conceptually something that could be happening?
Yeah, I think it's definitely an interesting feature. From our perspective, what we've struggled to do is say, you know, in Visual Studio, we all know that Visual Studio has a world-class debugging environment, and it does enable things as interesting as edit and continue. It jumps across machine boundaries. It does all these things in a debug environment. So what we've said is that the test features themselves should definitely be integrated with the debugger, so that if I'm, you know, if I've written a unit test and I start in my unit test and I'm making sure my unit test is good, then I jump into my dev code and I'm walking through the different stack of my dev code, different calls, I want to be able to set breakpoints and figure out, if you've given me a bug, where that bug's at. I don't want to have to, like, oh, well, the test code doesn't work with the debugger. You know, we didn't want that. So we went ahead and made that work. So that's definitely integrated. However, you know, to do something as interesting, and so in that mode, if you were in your dev code and you decided to edit something and you want to continue, I think normal Visual Studio edit and continue rules would apply. But if you want to do something interesting, like make your test part of your build system inside Visual Studio that runs as part of edit and continue, we're not there yet. But we hope you get to those interesting scenarios. I mean, in the end, I think we all kind of understand that when you look at the test-driven development in the Agile communities, what they're really touting is, can we get test really tightly integrated into the development project and into the development cycle so that we can find bugs faster, save money? And that's really what we're trying to do, just bring it back closer. And things like static analysis is really what that's all about, you know, actually finding the bugs even before you run them, you know, actually looking at compile time and before compile time and finding those bugs. So in that vein, we're going down that path and getting, you know, getting as tightly coupled as we can. Yeah, so the next point that we wanted to bring up was that there's also this idea of human error sometimes accounts for missed methods and sometimes entire missed classes when you're doing unit testing. I'm trying to do unit testing of a large code base. Sometimes I didn't write that code base. I inherited it. That's, you know, if you think about the lifetime of your code, it's not just this year. If it, you know, typically it's a couple of years. It's more than a couple. It's a long time. And more than one person kind of inherits that code. In some cases, you inherit code that really didn't adhere to a unit testing standard, or another developer didn't have time to write those unit tests. So not always do you know every method. And even if you do know every method, sometimes they're so numerous, and you haven't written the unit test one off every time you've done it, you now find yourself in the unfortunate position of trying to figure out, how do I keep up? And it's tedious, and it's hard. And a lot of times we have this error. We have this, like, you know, this missed method problem. So if we look at this and we've said, how can we help generate tests for you? And this isn't a feature to really, you know, stop you from thinking. This doesn't do your testing for you. This actually helps you, you know, not type as much, right? You know, give you the template, give you the skeleton. In some cases, we give you a lot of code to really help you out. In other cases, we might only give you a framework, like the actual method itself. It really depends on how significant the code you're testing against is. So what we can do is look at a namespace, an entire namespace, right-click on that namespace and say, generate code for this namespace. We'll look at all the classes and all the testable elements in that entire namespace and generate unit tests from them immediately. And in most cases, you'll get a default level of coverage just with those unit tests. So with one right-click on an entire namespace, you get a basic level of coverage without writing a single line of code. Now, that basic level of coverage may not be as interesting as you really are going to want it. So we don't actually put those tests and say whether they pass or fail. We morally say they're inconclusive because you have to look at them. Again, it doesn't stop you from thinking. It stops you from typing. So we can also go to a class level and say, you know, forget the whole namespace. This specific class that I've created, I want to, you know, generate tests for all of it, all of the methods and all the testable properties inside it. Or I want to drop right down to the method, the actual testable element, the method, the property, what have you. Right-click on that guy, generate code for that particular method or that particular property, and get that for you, get that skeleton for you. And so, you know, really this is about, you know, bringing that productivity to you and cutting down on the tediousness. Do you want to run this one?
Sure.
Okay. So now we're going to show you a demo of using code generation. Tom's going to run that.
Take it away, Tom.
Hi. I don't know what there's left to be said. You covered everything.
That's right.
You just didn't see it.
That's right. So you probably want to go ahead and load the animal to do that.
Good idea. That's exactly what I was going to do.
Is there a way when you're putting in that skeletal code, is there an assert or a state that it can be in that is, this test harness is not complete, but I don't want it firing off as inconclusive? So that as I'm building out those test cases for that legacy code that doesn't have any tests, so they don't start blowing the reporting on their outs.
Right? So it's not an actual fail error, right? It's an inclusive one.
That's right. But you can do both. You can filter out. You can also just take the inconclusive out.
Oh, and just not assert anything.
Well, actually, we'll show you what we do here. Okay. We'll kind of show you the basic thing. So we actually understood that some people won't want the inconclusive, but some people who are very pure about the notion of, you know, what I want is a pass or a failure. I don't want inconclusive. I want to actually have a pass or fail, or I want to maybe put my own assert in. We're not sure if we'll get to the point where we can include your own customer assert in at code generation level, but we definitely understood the inconclusive might not be what you'd want, so we gave you a way to turn that off, and Tom will show you that in just a moment.
Okay, so as Jason said, he was talking about inheriting somebody else's code. So what I've done is I've created a new project called My Tests, and I've opened a project called Animals, or Animal, which is a program that Jason wrote for demonstration. So I'd like to go in and actually...
one part is the front end, which is Animal, and one part is kind of the internals, the guts of the program, which my sense of humor. Sorry.
Right. So we're going to test some of the animal guts. Specifically, we're going to look at testing the persistence manager piece. And what Jason was talking about is that we can go through and, like he said, generate tests for the namespace level, class level, all the way down to the method level. So I'm going to go ahead and create one for the class level. And you notice that I'm right-clicking in the editor itself. As I right-click on the class, and I select, I'll get, a context menu. I've got Create Tests now, showing up as a first-class citizen. So when I select Create Tests, you'll notice it brings up this Unit Test Generation dialog box. And this lists everything that I can create tests for. So it's basically everything that it knows about, but you'll notice that it's specifically the context is around what I just selected. Okay, there's some other things available to us where I can control exactly how it's creating these tests. So we're talking about how you can create inconclusive by default. So we can go ahead and do that here, so it'll go ahead and just create that assert for us for every one of the tests, or I can turn that off if you don't like that. I can also go down to the point of telling it exactly how I want to name everything. So I can, right now what we're doing is we're taking the class name and then appending test to the end of it, and the same with the for every test class. Same with the methods. So we're just going to go with the defaults. Oh, we got some pirate pictures.
That's right. The pirate pictures are all over the place now. All
right. So once I've selected exactly what I want, I can then tell it which project I want to put it into. And we advocate the idea of putting things into specifically a test project, so you're not shipping your tests with your code. Okay. So I've got my tests, which I mentioned I set up already. I can click generate, and it'll go through, and you'll see that it went pretty quickly. What it'll do is, what Jason showed as doing by hand before, I'm scrolling up through all of this, you can see that we went through and did all the busy work for you. Again, it's not doing all the thinking for you, it's doing a lot of the busy work for you. So we've got a couple of things here. We've got, as Jason pointed out before, we've got the test class that identifies it, that is holding tests. We've got a method specifically for doing initialization steps for each of your tests, as well as cleanup. And then you can scroll down a little bit further, and we've got the actual tests themselves. And we've got a couple of different asserts going on here as well. So one of the assert types we've got is called R equals. So it's basically passing a value, and it's verifying it with the expected result. Again, end unit-like behavior. And then, of course, we've got the assert inconclusive. Now, I actually haven't written any tests for animal yet, Jason, so I may just go with what's going here as the default. One thing you also notice is that it is smart enough, as it's generating the code, it'll look at the parameters that can be passed to the method that's being tested, and it'll go ahead and create the appropriate variable types to pass, and initialize them just to a default, just a simple default null or zero value. Okay.
What's interesting about that is that in one hand, of course, we know that if you put the default variables inside there, zero and null and all that good stuff, it's not an actual valid call. if you are testing, you know, certain sets of methods, you know, according to your spec, that might be not be valid input. However, it's interesting to test the boundary condition. So even out of the box, you know, testing the boundary condition of if I did pass zero, pass null, what would happen? I mean, that's a decent basic test, though you're going to have to go back and, you know, kind of add more variables to it.
So I may have fouled something up, but I'm getting an error when I'm trying to build this specific test.
So, right. Did you compile animal beforehand to make sure it compiled?
I did. But let me try it again.
Okay.
So animal building compiles. And animal guts.
And we compile the tests.
And then I compiled the tests separately as well.
Jump to that real quick to see what they said there.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, go ahead and delete.
Crying out loud.
Unit test one. I'm not sure what that is.
Oh, this is leftover from your handwritten one?
Yeah, I'm not sure why that would be that way. Let's go ahead and...
Right.
I'm not sure why that's there. Yep. Go ahead and build it.
My bad. Sweet. And so now you'll notice over in the test view window, all those methods that we've created tests for are showing up over here in the test view. And so I can select those and tell it to go ahead and run them. And this is what you've seen before, where I've got the run configuration dialog box. I can tell it if I want to run it locally or if I want to run it remotely. And then, of course, code coverage, where I can go through and basically run and have it show code coverage. Now, as I run the test, you notice that it's showing the outcome of all these tests. Again, we've not done any of the actual setup for these tests, so a lot of them are failing or being flagged as inconclusive, which is telling me that I need to go in and actually do some work on these tests. Anything to add to this one, Jason?
I do actually have. Can you jump back to the test code really fast?
Yeah.
Can we minimize the results viewer there?
You bet.
Yeah. So I just want to kind of show you a couple of interesting, cool features here, I think. So let's go ahead and let me drive it for a minute. Oh, man,
you bet.
Get in there.
Shake some
kind of coolness here. So if I go back to the Animal Guts class for a minute, check out Persistence Manager. Let's go ahead and look at the object browser really fast. Where is that good guy? Check out Animal Guts here. Check out Persistence Manager. Right, so this is the actual test, the actual methods we just tested, right? We have this base set of methods that the base set of classes we've just generated. So what's interesting about this is that this is what we've tested. Notice that one of these guys is private, right? You know, if you want to test this, this is private, this is a property. So not just methods, but actually the property itself and a private method. So, you know, a lot of times when you're doing unit testing, you're the dev, or you're the white box tester, and you do want to test some private methods. You do want to make sure they conform to a spec. We can do that in .NET by using reflection, but writing that code, it's not very fun, right? So what we've done, if we go and jump to the test really quickly, we see that the private guy is called load list. So we come down here, we find load list test, we click on that, and we jump right to the dev code, to the test code. And what we see here is that the accessor, we created the target, which was Persistence Manager. We then created a Persistence Manager accessor that we made for you that allows us to get to the private members of that particular class. We then look, and there's this nice code-gen accessor.cs file added to our project. If we look inside that, we see all the reflection code that we need built for you inside that file so that you can get to all the private members of that particular class without you writing a single line of code.
Nice.
Yeah, thank you. That's good stuff. Great stuff. So if you look at the code, the way we built it is actually, you can see. Yeah.
Well, I've written code like that. I don't know how many times to unit test private or protected stuff that I need. That's awesome.
Excellent. It's great to hear that.
That's awesome.